It's happy birthday.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike's board of wise men challenges the nation to a test of wit and wisdom. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muffed, you get the Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information, Please. Now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, on this Christmas night, Information, Please wishes all its listeners as happy a Christmas as these times may permit, and looks forward to another Christmas when peace, and not a negotiated peace, will rejoice our hearts. Tonight, we celebrate in our own quiet way with our usual unrehearsed program, offering our brace of veterans, Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran. And by the way, almost 5 years of Information, Please have so broadened Mr. Kieran's mind that a new career is opening up before him. Beginning January 4th, he will run a daily column in the New York Sun, writing on things in general, from bees to battleships. Congratulations, John. And tonight, our guests are two in number, James Wallace, judge of the Court of General Sessions, and secondly, our old friend, Leon Henderson. And now, gentlemen, we'll begin with a question from John T. Matthews of La Porte, Texas. It's about American events and personalities of the day before yesterday. Oh, well, several days before yesterday, as a matter of fact, because the first question is, who was the first Cyrano de Bergerac? Who played it first in this country? Well, you have to go back quite a way. Mr. Adams.
I think Richard Mansfield.
Richard Mansfield is absolutely right. What were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
I was going to be very wrong.
I
was going to say Walter Hampton. He was the first one I saw. But I have to tell you who played it first in France, Poquelin.
Yes, and he had a naturally long nose, didn't he? He didn't have to build it up or out.
I didn't know the gentleman.
Where did Steve Brody take a chance? Judge Wallace.
On the Brooklyn Bridge.
Off the Brooklyn Bridge. Quite right. And what was Anna Held's most popular song? Anna Held's... Oh, we have several elderly hands on this. Elderly hands, as a matter of fact. Mr. Adams?
Won't you come and play with me?
Or I just can't make my eyes behave.
I think that's the one, Judge. Just can't make my eyes behave. Oh, wasn't there another one? It's delightful to be married. Do you remember that, Judge?
It wasn't Anna's, I don't think.
Yes, it was.
Hmm? Well,
it wasn't one of the ones that made her poppily.
Maybe not with you, Judge. But that gives us 3 out of 3. How about this one from E.R. Slade of Ansonia, Connecticut? I want you to quote a line of poetry, or better still, sing a song that mentions a gift that you might have given or received for Christmas. But we'll try to get... Let's have 3 of them. Sing a song that mentioned... You can get together on this and sort of collaborate. Collude is the word, Mr. Kieran.
All of me, why not take all of me?
We might say love sends a little gift of roses.
Oh, that's very pretty, Mr. Adams.
Any bonds today?
Any bonds today or just my bill on some credit? Any, you can think of any others, Mr. Henderson? Any gift that you might have received?
One dozen roses.
Well, I know a beautiful song if they know it.
One dozen roses, wrap my heart up inside them, and send them to the one I love.
What a boy. I've never known the Office of Price Administration to do better, Mr. Henderson. Mr. Kieran?
Take back your gold.
For gold can never buy me. Take back your bribe and promise to be true. Give me your love, the love that you denied me. May make me your wife. That's all I ask of you.
That's a wonderful Christmas poem, Judge. Marvelous. And now here's one from Mrs. G.M. Crisp of West Asheville, North Carolina. I'm going to read some news flashes, three of them. Tell me what's wrong about them. Here's the first. Listen carefully. Augusta, Maine, November 6th, 1942. The whole state ticket was triumphantly reelected in yesterday's elections. Judge Wallace?
What was that date, please?
November 6th, 1942.
The whole state ticket was not triumphantly elected in that.
Why, Mr. Adams?
Because the Maine elections do not come on November 5th.
Yes, when do they come?
September.
Yes, the Maine elections in September. We get what famous phrase?
As Maine goes, so goes the nation.
Is there anything in it, Mr. Henderson?
No.
Not until recently.
Well, that is what is wrong with the news flash. Now, here's another news flash. Listen carefully. New York, July 10th, 1942. The heavyweight crown passed today to the challenger, who was fouled by the title holder in the second round. Mr. Kieran?
Well, in the first place, it didn't take...
Well, it's an imaginary imaginary
it can't
flash.
Pass on a foul of that description, because a foul blow delivered in a round in New York State merely loses the fowler that round.
Yes. When was that rule established, Mr. Kieran?
That was established, I believe, after the Sharkey Schmeling
fight. Yes, wasn't it during Jim Farley's regime as head of the boxing
that's
commission?
Right.
That's right.
Jim Farley put in, and a very good rule it is.
Seems
boy, is the son lucky.
Now, here's another one. What's wrong with this? This should appeal to you, Judge. The legislature has passed a bill reducing the salary of the judges of the Court of General Sessions.
Well.
Information, please, is Christmas present to you, General.
That appeals to me very much. But unfortunately, fortunately, the legislature cannot do that because the salaries of the judges of that court and the Supreme Court are protected by the Constitution of the the state of New York.
I bet nobody could wipe that smile of satisfaction off your face.
Of course, that doesn't prevent them from taxing us.
You like that word, protected? I've heard that before.
How about this one, gentlemen, for Mrs. Dean McCall of Bound Brook, New Jersey. This definitely you have to sing. Sing three song favorites of the soldiers of the First World War, in each of which a girl's name is mentioned. Now, you want to get together.
Mademoiselle,
Polly, Boo. Her name wasn't mentioned.
No, her name wasn't mentioned.
Katie, beautiful Katie. You're the only one
girl that I adore. When the moon shines over the cowshed, I'll be waiting at the kitchen door. But don't get down in the cellar, boy.
You can't raise up the judge. That gives us Katie and Mademoiselle, who undoubtedly had a name. Any other? Mr. Kieran?
Madelon.
Yes. That come back to you? Sure, and there were others. The Rose of No Man's Land, I suppose Rose is the name.
Rose of Picardy.
Sister Susie sewing shirts and so forth. Any one of those. How about this one from Winifred Lyon of Kansas City, Missouri? I'm going to tell you something about three different girls. Each of them bested her male adversary, got the better of him.
That's pretty vague.
Well, I'll see if I can.
Maybe definite enough.
I'll make it more definite. And they also did other things. Now, the first one bested her male adversary and saved her country. Who was that? This is a character from history. Mr. Kieran.
Charlotte Corday.
No.
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc, yes. Could you explain?
She lifted the siege of Orléans. I can't give you the date, though. Let's see.
Neither can I, Mr. Kieran.
Do you like a little incidental music here about Joan of Arc?
About the time Henry the Sixth. Well, it was in England.
Yes, and Charles the Seventh. And who she did what the war chiefs, the men of both the England and France, failed to do. Now, how about a gal who got the better of a male enemy or opponent and saved her client? Saved her client.
Character in Shakespeare.
Mr. Henderson?
Character in Portia.
Yes, Portia is right. In The Merchant of Venice, disguised as a lawyer, she outwitted Mr. Henderson. Whom? Whom did she outwit in The Merchant of Venice? Shylock, yes. And which
girls helped save an old woman from a wolf. Apparently there's no age limit for some wolves. Mr. Curran.
Little Red Riding Hood.
Yes, what's the story? How did she manage to do all this?
Saved her grandma, eventually, by summoning the wood choppers who chopped open the wolf and removed the grandmother by a major operation.
Yes, that's right. And now Mr. Rysdale points out the advantages for smokers who seize time by the forelock.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, here we are almost at the end of 1942. Perhaps during the past year, you've been intending to try Lucky's, but then you've kept putting it off. If so, you may be missing something. Or make no mistake, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Better tobacco gives you a milder, better-tasting, more enjoyable cigarette. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. That's worth remembering. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw. For ladies and gentlemen, year after year, the same story comes out of the tobacco country. At auctions all over the South, the makers of Lucky's consistently select and buy the riper, lighter, milder leaf. Truly, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And certainly, fine tobacco adds to your enjoyment. Mr. Fadiman, have I given good substantial reasons why smokers should seize time by the forelock and try Lucky's now?
Mr. Rysdale, your 60-second summary of the facts surely calls for prompt action. And now a question from Charles W. Hall of Kingston, Massachusetts. Hey, another singing question. The spirit of Christmas is certainly regnant around here this evening. How about singing for us, let's say three songs, about people who are missing or lost or gone away? For example, there's a song in Hamlet called Where, Oh, Where Has My True Love Gone? Now, can you think of three other songs and sing them for us about people who are gone or missing, Judge?
I wonder who's kissing her now. I wonder who's teaching her how. I wonder who's looking into her eyes, breathing sighs, telling lies. I wonder who's buying the wine for lips that I once thought were mine. I wonder if she ever tells him of me. I wonder who's kissing her now.
That was made perfect, by the way, by the silence of Mr. Adams. Yes, Mr. Adams.
Where is my little dog gone? That doesn't come in there, I guess.
Yes, I think so.
Oh, where has my little dog gone? Oh, where can he be? With his ears cut long and his tail cut short. Oh, where can he be?
Thank you. Did that give us three missings, Mr. Adams?
No, my darling, you are lost and gone forever, oh, my darling Clementine.
That's a very good one. For heaven's sake, don't sing that.
Clementine.
Yes. Henderson, there's no way of stopping
you. We won't.
I know.
Well, there are ways to stop me.
There is also the little lost child.
Not on this program.
The little lost child.
Yes. Anybody here seen Kelly is one about somebody lost. Where's my wandering boy?
That isn't a girl, lost girl.
I didn't say girl. You've just got girls on the brain. I said people. Just people.
Well, can't be any candor, can he?
Gentlemen. Try this one from Anita M. Lodico of Rochester, New York. Shall we get all on this? I think this is a very easy question. Complete the familiar line that begins as follows. When faith is lost, how does that go on? Mr. Curran.
I think the man is dead or the soul is dead.
The man is
the
dead.
The man is dead, and it was said about Daniel Webster.
That's right. By whom?
It was said by one of the New England poets.
Had a beard. Who was he?
Whittier, was
That's
it?
Right. Whittier, yes.
Because he voted on a certain way that Whittier didn't like on a national issue in Congress.
That's right. When faith is lost, when honor dies, the man is dead, and Mr. Kieran's given us the complete story and completed the line for us. Now, how about this incomplete line? When lilacs last, how does that go on? Mr. Adams.
In the dooryard blooms.
Yes, Mr. Kieran?
By W. Whitman.
By W. Whitman. Can you give us the second line after that, the beautiful line? When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed and the great star early drooped in the night, I mourned and yet shall mourn with ever-returning spring, one of Whitman's best-known poems. Now, how about the line that begins, when in doubt? When in doubt, Mr. Judge Wallace?
Put it out.
Put it out, yes, the dim-out warning. And Mr. Adams, in Hoyle there is a line that begins, when in doubt.
Play trumps.
Yes, win, win the trick. How about this one? That gives us 3 out of 3. Margaret Levy of New York City sends this one in. Each of the songs that you're going to have played for you, by a pleasant contrast, is going to suggest a court action. What court action is suggested by this song? Let's have the first. Mr. Adams?
Well, that would, that is an elopement.
What's it from?
It's from Pinafore.
And what's it describe?
The...
Elopement isn't a court action.
Well,
it?
That was an elopement.
I know, but you can't be arrested for an elopement, ordinarily.
Silently on...
Kidnapping.
Yes, and, well, what, it seemed to me...
Theft,
then. Pardon?
Kidnapping.
Yes, theft, Mr. Henderson. Burglary, or isn't larceny the right word, Judge?
Well, it all depends. If you break or enter a house, dwelling, or clothes, it would be burglary.
Yes,
merely pilfer.
Yes, yeah. Carefully on tiptoe stealing. I think that's the one. Mr. Henderson caught it. Now the second one. Mr. Henderson, you have the song. What's the song called?
I hate to see the evening sun.
That's right. And it's Mr. Kieran?
Well, it would be price fixing.
How do you get that?
Well, I want to want to see something go down.
That's no court action.
Well, there isn't. As far as the newspapers are concerned, there is no price control on newspapers. Either the Evening Sun or just the Sun.
Well, I shouldn't think that would
I
be the court
to see
action.
That Evening Sun hire Kieran.
No, if you go through the lyrics of St. Louis Blues, got the St. Louis Blues, just blue as I can be, that man got a heart like a rock cast in the sea. What's the man done? What's the gal complaining of in the song?
Alienation of affection.
Well, desertion. He's deserted her. It seems to me that's the court action that would be suggested by that particular song, and that gives us one wrong. And now the third and last. I have all hands on this. Judge Wallace.
Well, that's Rufus Rastus Johnson Brown. What's he going to do when the rent comes around?
Yes.
So I suppose it'd be an action for not paying your rent.
Yes, dispossessed proceeding.
What are you going to say? What are you going
to... That's the one. Well, I think we lose a $50 war bond on that. And that sends that to Margaret Levy, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and a set of the Britannica. Now a question from Harold Buzzard of Elkhart, Indiana. Who listened to these storytellers? Again, I think we should get all on this. Who listened to these storytellers? I'll give you a tag line. There was a ship, quoth he. Who listened to the he, Mr. Adams?
The wedding guest.
The wedding guest, yes. It's from what poem?
The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. The wedding guest sat on a stone. He could not choose but hear.
That's the one, Mr. Adams. That's perfect. Now, how about this one? Say, give me another whiskey and I'll tell you what I'll do. Who listened to the man who said that? Mr. Henderson, Judge Wallace?
I think the bartender listened to him.
Well, you're a little too precise.
Dangerous Dan McGrew.
Oh, Mr. Kieran?
I think it's good. The Goodly crowd was there.
Face on the barroom floor.
Yes.
That's the Goodly crowd that was there.
Goodly crowd.
Give me a whiskey and I'll draw the face on the barroom floor, which he proceeded to do and then fell across it.
That's right. That's very, very dramatic. It was a goodly crowd, though, as Mr. Kieran, who did the listening, and not merely the bartender. Although you may be forgiven for your partiality.
Bartender always listens, in my experience.
Now, here's another one. I am a rogue if I were not half sword with a dozen of them, 2 hours together. Mr. Kieran.
Well, those who listened would be probably Bardolph, Prince Hal, Pito, and a few more of the hangers-on in King Henry IV, first part, Falstaff telling of his encounter with 7 or 11 men in Buckram.
What page?
I...
That's good work. Good work, Mr. Kieran. How about this one from Constance McAllister of Arlington, Massachusetts? I guess we ought to get 2 out of 3 on this one. Differentiate the following. These are three kinds of funds, F-U-N-D-S. Slush fund, sinking fund, conscience fund. What's a slush fund, Mr. Henderson?
Well, a slush fund is a fund taken up for the purpose of influencing legislation, usually illegally.
Yes, used for bribing or corrupting. How about a sinking fund? Mr. Henderson, try you again
sinking
on that.
Sinking fund are funds put aside for the amortization of, usually of a bonded indebtedness.
Yes, you couldn't make that any simpler for me, could you?
I haven't been able to do it for myself.
That's quite right. Mr. Judge Wallace?
Conscience fund, you want?
Conscience fund, yes.
That's when you cheat the government and get sorry for it and send them the money afterwards.
Don't yes.
Pay your taxes or pilfer something.
And Mr. Henderson, is there a large conscience fund down in Washington or a small one?
Well, it's small in relation to all the consciences. it's relatively large in money.
Yes, that's right.
Even you and I could live comfortably on it.
Also, a conscience fund is used popularly to apply to money sent by people who have sort of taken books away from a library without letting people know, and then they generally send back some money later on to salve their consciences. How about this one from John G. Espy of Los Angeles, California? Who are these people who are unable to finish what they were reading? The first one was unable to complete his reading of The Lay of the Last Minstrel. Who was that?
That's me.
I didn't ask for literary criticism for that. Mr. Kieran?
I didn't say who. He was reading The Lay of the Last Minstrel?
This man was reading The Lay of the Last Minstrel and never could finish reading it. He was reading a part of it. Oh, it's one of the most famous stories. Every
Sir
American
Walter
knows
Scott.
The story. No? Philip Nolan and The Man Without a Country. You remember, he reads those famous lines.
Oh, he threw the book overboard.
That's right. I think we all should remember that. That gives us one wrong. We have to get the next two right. This one never found time to get beyond the opening pages of The Education of Henry Adams, a classic by Henry Adams. Now, who is the gentleman who never could get beyond the opening pages?
That's me, I think.
Is that you, Judge? Well, it's the hero of H.M. Pullum, Esquire, by the well-known novelist John Marquand. Mr. Pullum never could get beyond the opening pages of that book. How about this? They never finished their reading of The Romance of Lancelot. This is a pair of people who never finished reading The Romance of Lancelot, one of the stories of Arthur and the Round Table. Mr. Kieran, I'm sure you know this.
No, I don't.
Oh, yes, you do.
Well, it wasn't Paolo and Francesca.
Why, certainly it was, Judge. Your old friends, Paolo and Francesca.
My mind is still working.
Working overtime. Yes, in Dante's Inferno, the lovers who were interrupted while they were reading that famous book, and they were killed by Francesca's husband. And now, before we go on to the next question, by the way, we lost a $50 war bond on that, and a set of the Britannica going out to Mr. Espy. And now, before we go on to the next question, Mr. Cross has something to say about tobacco experts and pedestals.
Well, a friend recently asked me, Cross, why do you put those tobacco experts on such a pedestal? And he added with a smile, I'm not in the tobacco business. I'm just a smoker. Ladies and gentlemen, here's what I pointed out to him. Independent tobacco experts aren't on any pedestal. They're smokers themselves. When they light a cigarette, they're looking for the same qualities of mildness and better taste you want. The only difference is that these experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, really know tobacco from A to Z. Indeed, they must, for tobacco is their bread and butter. At auctions they attend all over the South, these experts can't help but see who buys what tobacco. And year after year, they see Lucky Strike consistently select the riper, lighter, milder leaf. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, so round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. From the smoker's own viewpoint, Mr. Fadiman, aren't these facts worth acting on?
Thank you, Mr. Cross. You've given new meaning to that familiar phrase, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. And now a question from Genevieve Taylor of Portland, Oregon. Now, gentlemen, suppose you were going to entertain each of these characters at the theater. What play might you be inclined to take them to see? Let's get 2 out of 3, and the first character is King Midas. What play might you take him to see?
A Fool's Gold.
Is that a title of a play?
Oh, that's an old-time play, yes. It's way before your time.
I'm afraid it is, yes.
At least 50 years old.
It sounds right, though. A Fool's Gold would be very good. Mr. Adams.
Gold by Eugene O'Neill.
Gold by Eugene O'Neill sounds very good. Golden Boy. Or a great success of a couple of years ago, You Can't Take It With You, would be a good one to take King Midas to. How about Eve, the mother of us all? And some peculiar progeny she's had, looking at this group of experts here this evening. Mr. Henderson.
You one of those Greek plays, I'd think.
One of those Greek plays?
Yeah.
Which one?
Greeks had a word for it, didn't they?
What play would you take Eve to see? Well, there was a play called...
The Women.
Pardon?
Take her to see The Women.
The Women would be very good, Mr.
Henderson. The First Year you could take her to see.
The First Year? First Lady? Yes. Wisdom Tooth? Wasn't there a play called The Wisdom Tooth, I think? And how about Salome? You would take her to see what play? Remember the story of Salome, Mr. Kieran?
Arsenic and Old Lace.
That would be very good. Or Kiss the Boys Goodbye, maybe. And now one from C. Albert Lamke of Brooklyn. Our pianist will play a song whose title contains the name of a city. You're to show that you recognize it by singing another song that mentions the corresponding state in which the city is. Let's have the first. Mr. Henderson?
Off to Buffalo, but I don't understand what you're supposed to do.
Well, now, you know in what state Buffalo is.
Yes.
You have to sing a song in which that state appears, the name of the state. Mr. Adams?
Hey, in old New York, in old New York, the peach crops always fine.
I'll interrupt you now and go on to the next one. Let's have the next song. Oh, let's have them all. Let's go.
And when I first met Kate, was at the... California. California, here I come.
Now the third
right
and last.
Right back where I...
Well, it's the Charleston, and Carolina Moon would be a good enough answer for that, but we did get 2 out of 3. Well, I think that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Judge Wallace, and thank you, Leon Henderson, for your contribution to the Christmas spirit tonight. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guests. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and 2 $50 war bonds. And speaking of bonds, here's a special message for Philadelphians. 2 weeks from tonight, on Friday, January 8th, Information, Please, makes its second stop on its bond tour for the Treasury Department. It'll broadcast from the Academy of Music in Philadelphia, and tickets will be issued to purchasers of bonds and denominations of $50 to $5,000. Ladies and gentlemen, it's customary on Christmas Day to wish peace on earth and goodwill to all men, and to assume that all men wish the same. But we know that we cannot assume this of the Nazis. The Nazis who hate peace, who laugh at goodwill, and who have decreed that nowhere in their pagan country shall there ever be read aloud the Sermon on the Mount. That we may destroy utterly these men of evil will by and by again the war bonds of your country. Next week, the Kieran Adams Levant Trio will be on hand, and to help them welcome in the new year will be our good friend, the eminent Hollywood maestro and universal linguist, Mr. Gregory Ratoff. Remember, listeners, to send your letters with questions and the correct answers. Don't forget to send us the correct answers. You sometimes do forget. To Information, Please,